respect in their own country. Third. 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 We need a massive training effort to build Iraqi security forces that can actually provide security for the Iraqi people. We must accept the effort to date has failed. It must be rethought and reformed. Training cannot be hurried. It has to be done in the field and on the job as well as in the classroom. And units cannot be put on the street without backup from international security forces. They cannot be rushed into battle before they are ready. This is a task to do in partnership with other nations, and it will be facilitated when it is done with other nations. And this is a task which must be successful. If we fail to create a viable Iraqi security force, military and police, there's no successful effort for us or for other nations. Now, the question. Why would other nations join a cause that they did not support in the first place, particularly when they see what's happening? For one simple reason. It is in their profound self-interest. And the president needs to put that self-interest on the table and put it clearly before the world. That's what leadership is all about. That's what we need to do. For the Europeans, Iraq's failure could endanger the security of their oil supplies, further radicalize their large Muslim populations, threaten destabilizing refugee flows, and seed a whole new sort of...
The hell up, you imperialist dog, Kerry. All this nonsense about. For the Europeans, Iraq's failure endangers the security of their oil supply. No, fool. Sam's victory endangers the security of their oil supply, and they know it. And then you spew out, why would other nations join a cause they did not support? Actually, many nations and people in general are supporting the cause. The only difference is we're supporting the cause of the Iraqi resistance. And then you garble. We need a massive training effort to build Iraqi forces so that they can actually provide security. Oh, in other words, Kerry, you need to train an indigenous mercenary killing squad for the U.S. imperialist killing machine since Saddam is gone and your own soldiers of Blackwater Fortune keep getting their ass shot off. Oh, yeah, and burnt up. Well, it's time for some more burning. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check this out. You're listening to 104.1, 96.3 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUBER.com, the world, slave revolt time. Tonight we're going to shoot our way into a Beyond the Shadow segment. That we're going to deal with how, at every turn, Sam keeps showing his ass, which exposes the imperialist killer that he is throughout the world. And then Gerald is going to blast his way into the Making It Plain news as he deals with Iraq. 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 So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave Revolt.
Well, what we do in the dark? We took your rags and made rope, took your kindling and grew fruit, picked your cotton and crafted reconstruction. That slave barrack hunger rages in our history. This too we take into the dark. Take it with our dances and our languages, huddle close to it in the Alabama cold, or Georgia cold, or Maryland cold. Who we be? You can't know us. We surviving the crossing and the crossings. We making it onto auction block and first round draft pick. We crossing ocean and swamp. We descendants of amputees and unknown fathers ridged with welts and patience. All this we take into the dark. At night, where you will not follow, where the dogs cannot reach, where you'd rather cut your losses on a nigger than lose two more bloodhounds to the chase. We have survived. Imagine what we hold in the corners. Who survived Tuskegee and smallpox blanket, heroin and COINTELPRO, Project Housing and Jim Crow, Lynchburg, Virginia and Lynchburg, Pennsylvania, Lynchburg, Texas and the whole motherfucking state of Mississippi. We feed on that slave barrack dust. Grow fat on your hatred. Bleed thongs and tap dances from your leftovers. Imagine who we be, living through the sardine shipment, the rapes, the castrations, the beatings, the humiliation. What son of Denmark Bessie you want to fuck with? What child of Tubman or Asata you want to run with? What son of Cuffy, Louverture, or Douglas? What Nat Turner progeny is in our dark corners, waiting to rise, the seed of Huey, child of Malcolm, Amistad, badass, you think you want to follow into this absurd future, not knowing the difference between backs and walls? What child of Crazy Horse you think you want to fight? These two we take into the dark, into these mysterious folds of skin, under arms and between our legs, backs of our throats and all them swamps you don't want to follow through. East New York, Brooklyn and Oakland, California. Fifth Ward, Houston and Southside, Chicago. Every reservation, every storefront church, every Santero ritual and Erzuli offering. What Buffalo Soldier you think you want? Turning on your ass. What jazz riff, what hip-hop beat, what reggae skank or gospel growl you want? Raising spirits against you. What calypso, what zydeco, what capoeira you want holding a gun to your head? We who survive Ku Klux Klan and move bombings, who didn't die in the Middle Passage. This shit ain't no coincidence. All this we take into the dark. Grow stink to fester like culture. You don't want no more of this Mau Mau shit, this Black Jacobin shit, this Maroon shit from we who survived Giuliani and Jasper, Texas. You think this shit would have been easier? Don't push us, Mr. White. You don't want us putting down this pen and emerging from this black night.
Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
You see, where they've gone, they're playing with the universe. They're playing with the solar system. But they have no perception and no way to measure what the amount of energy that's going to flow out from that light off is going to do to the rest of the planets in the solar system.
You know what time it is now. Beyond the Shadow. And tonight, what we're going to start off with is, everywhere Sam is turning, every move he's making just about, he keeps exposing his imperialist ass. Now, it may not be exposed by and large to the Gumpified majority in America's terror dome, but throughout the world, his arrogant actions and even his attempts at cover-up expose the true nature of the beast. So tonight, what we're going to start off in how Sam continuously keeps exposing himself is through a CNN report on how U.S. G.I. Joes got caught abusing and humiliating Iraqi men. So let's explore this a little bit and its ramifications, and then we'll take it from there. Check this out.
The White House says President Bush was moved by recent photos of military caskets, but he stands by the policy that keeps such pictures from being made public. Senior Pentagon correspondent Jamie McIntyre has our story.
These are pictures the Pentagon didn't want you to see. Row on row of flag-draped coffins on their final voyage home from Iraq or perhaps Afghanistan.
No, actually, those were good pictures. Never mind that. Here's the part I'm talking about.
The Arab world woke up today to shocking photos that apparently show U.S. troops abusing detainees at a prison outside Baghdad. The pictures have led to charges against six United States soldiers, and the images may have damaged the American mission in Iraq. CNN's Ben Wiedemann has reaction from Baghdad.
Iraqis watched disturbing images of abuse and humiliation on the Arabiya satellite news network, vividly depicting degradation of Iraqi detainees by U.S. soldiers in Abu Ghraib prison outside Baghdad. These images sending waves of revulsion through a conservative religious society that places a premium on dignity and modesty. Abu Ghraib prison, once a notorious symbol of Saddam Hussein's repression, now under American control. Few Iraqis likely to miss the irony that these acts were allegedly committed by soldiers of the very country that styles itself as a champion of human rights. It's wrong, wrong, 100%, and a crime, says Khalil. You came to liberate us from an unjust dictator who killed and tortured us. Coalition officials aren't mincing their words when it comes to these images, the authenticity of which have not been independently verified.
And I'm not going to stand up here and try to apologize for what those soldiers did. As I've said before, those soldiers wear the same uniform as 150,000 other soldiers that are operating proudly and properly here in Iraq. And those soldiers let us down. They simply let us down.
The U.S. military says six soldiers have been charged with abusing inmates as part of an ongoing criminal investigation that could lead to their court-martial. The military also is conducting a thorough review of how Abu Ghraib prison is run. Rumors have swirled around Baghdad for months that abuse of Iraqi prisoners was rife in Abu Ghraib. And for many Iraqis, confronted with these images, those rumors have now been confirmed.
Now, don't believe for a second that the various people in power, from the Pentagon on down, did not know or did not care to know about this. They got Guantanamo going on just across the bay. They know what the hell they're doing. This is to dehumanize and humiliate, demoralize people. This is how these clowns operate. This is how vicious they are. This is nothing new at all. This is part of their whole game plan. They've been violating all types of Geneva Convention standards. All of this deprivation of food, water, sleep deprivation that they openly talk about. All of this calling people non-combatants or illegal combatants and all of this. This is all breaking the basic human rights of combatants in warfare. This is because Sam's a lawless country.
That's right.
So these pictures came out and exposed Sam's ass and his little G.I. Joes for what they really are. Ruthless, cowardly brutes. And that's what they don't like, the exposure. And one of the guys said it himself when he said this picture may hurt the U.S. mission in Iraq. In other words, the exposure of how brutal Sam is in this microcosm type way. This is just a microcosm of Sam's action. All of this, you know, stripping them down naked, making them climb up on top of each other and act as if they're having sex with one another, you know, on and on and on.
Sick.
This is to dehumanize these individuals and break them down. Now, they also say, they're concerned because this is a conservative religious society who puts a premium on dignity and modesty and all of that type of stuff. So they know what the Iraqi culture is like in many ways. And they know that those men that they had doing all of that type of stuff are part of that culture. That's why they were doing it to them. You know, this does go into some stuff about how people who play into what is dignified and what is not dignified. Well, let me put it like this.
Well, all right. I'll tell you what. Here is where racism, just genocidal racism, intersects in imperialist policy. The British can tell you, anybody can tell you, you're occupying a country, what you want to do is develop a cooperative stratum. Sometimes these people are called compradors. Sometimes we call them Uncle Toms or Quislings. But the point is, it's a cooperative stratum that consciously is going to work with imperialism. Now, one way that you can make it difficult to do that is precisely what they're doing right now. It's one thing to take somebody and arrest them. See? It's another thing to use these sick psychological abuses that Tracy just described. That is vile. I don't care what your religion is. That's vile. Now, but let's keep it. I'm going to try to politicize it, though, because, see, what's happening is, what is the United States doing there? Well, it's oil. It's geopolitical. It's imperialism, right? The highest and, I would add, final stage of capitalism. That's what they're carrying out there. Now, how do you motivate, then, a foot soldier, who obviously is not an imperialist, even if his poor little mind is messed up, who has very little to gain, personally, from all this? I'm telling you, one of the things that goes on is very ugly, but they call these people ragheads and sand this and all, you know, any kind of little racially derogative, that is not only tolerated, it is encouraged amongst the ranks. That genocidal impulse is fed in the basic training. Kill, kill, kill! Go, soldier, kill, kill, kill! Then they have a picture of some Arab form, and then you stick your bayonet in that 20 times. You know, this kind of madness. So they're conditioning these people to act this way. And they think that by dominating the Iraqis, by showing them who's the boss, that you can do anything you want to these people, that they will fear you and they'll cower and run away and say, oh, please, master, don't hurt me. Well, you silly son of a... If you can't see that that's not working by now, then your eyes are simply, you know, they're not functioning properly. What has happened? Everything they do, they make serious errors. Serious errors. Now, people see with their own eyes how they have treated. Now, they've also, it's the Americans. Remember just recently, there was an airplane that took off. Now, Tracy, you heard about this. And they had a number of bodies in the, it was actually people in pine boxes and coffins with a flag open. And an American lady working there took a picture. They fired her on the spot. That's right. Well, you know, but why? Because they don't want the Americans here to know what's really going on. And you know what? They really don't want the American people here to know that they allow the soldiers to act that way.
They know that a portion of the American population knows what's going on, but the American population acts in kind of an infantile way. In other words, unless you bring hardcore facts where a lot of these pathetic individuals in this country can't squirm from and deny any longer, then they'll make every other excuse and wait for the leader, i.e. Boy George, their little leader, as they, you know, look at it, to navigate his way through for why they're involved. So before the war started, Saddam was an imminent threat. And we attacked that wholeheartedly before the war even started. And all this weapons of mass destruction scenario that Boy George and company were building up. Then they go over there, no weapons of mass destruction, no connection to Al-Qaeda, no connection to the 911 hits. So now, all of a sudden, Boy and them switch it to, this was just a removal of the leadership in Iraq to build democracy. This is not what they were spewing out before, and much of the American population followed right along suit with that. And unless you hammered them with hard evidence about and presented to them what Boy and them were saying before, they were just regurgitating out what Boy and them were saying as if we were in some kind of parallel universe. This really highlights the degeneration of a society. If you read some of the books that have come out by soldiers who even served in the first Gulf War, you'll hear them talk about how they went to war for the fat oil Texans. Yet, they get into all of this type of stuff of how they dehumanize one another, dry rape one another out in the sand, all of this type of stuff, because many of them feel that there's no alternative but to be an obedient gladiator in the Roman Colosseum and perform their function for the rulers of this society obediently. Now, next, let's hear Wolf Blitzowitz from CNN. He gives a report along with some of Boy George's stumbling and mumblings on the G.I. Joe's humiliation of the Iraqi pictures that were exposed. So let's see how they once again try to, you know, do their best to not show their ass, even though it keeps getting exposed. Check this out.
The White House calls the acts shown in the photographs despicable, and the president is mincing no words in offering his own reaction.
I shared a deep disgust that those prisoners were treated the way they were treated. Their treatment does not reflect the nature of the American people. That's not the way we do things in America. And so I didn't like it one bit.
The president is also promising disciplinary action.
Those few people who did that do not reflect the nature of the men and women we sent overseas. That's not the way the people are. It's not their character that are serving our nation and the cause of freedom. And there'll be an investigation, and they'll be taken care of.
Senator John Kerry today also reacted to those shocking images. In a statement, he says he's, quote, disturbed and troubled by the evidence of shameful mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners. Kerry's statement adds this: as Americans, we must stand tall for the rule of law and freedom everywhere, but we cannot let the actions of a few overshadow the tremendous good work that thousands of soldiers are doing every day in Iraq and all over the world.
That's enough of that poor shit. Listen, they're killing, what are they talking about? Just recently, when Fallujah rose up and said they'd had enough of this American occupation and began to fight back and ran them out, ran the U.S. Army out of Fallujah. That's what they did. That said it, that showed right there, you know, that people, had, what the Iraqi people really felt about the U.S. in their land. Now, when George Bush says, oh, you know, this is terrible, blah, 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 he was prepped that this doesn't happen in our country. What the hell are you talking about? Anybody that knows anything about the American prisons knows all kind of madness goes on inside. Some of it prompted by the administration of the American prisons. Gang fights, rapes of individual male, all kind of sick, unhealthy, antisocial behavior right here in the USA. So he says, oh, no, this is terrible, this is bad, blah, blah, blah. That's the same thing his dad said when they jumped on, when the L.A. police jumped on old Rodney King. It was almost a, what he said is almost a quote, would show you how much people's words are really worth. Because what really counts is what they going to do. And I can tell you what they going to do. They not even going, not one of those soldiers is going to be punished. Why not? Well, because the only way, given the dynamics of occupation, that's how they're going to deal with the Iraqis. It's going to be hateful, It's going to be cruel, mean-spirited, a little sick. That's what they got to do. This it ain't going to be no professional. Oh, sir, would you step over here 1 second and empty your pockets? It ain't going to be nothing like that. This is nasty. This is imperialism at work. They cannot do anything but inhumane acts. You understand? The whole thing is wrong. I'm telling you, they will not. They will not persecute any of those soldiers that carried out this dastardly deed. That's a prediction.
Well, that's worth kind of seeing. They may have to throw up some sacrificial lambs. as far as boy getting up there once again and mentioning, as Gerald was saying, about that's not reflective of our policies, soldiers, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you had about 5,000 South Asians and others, Arabs, get collected up in Sam's Gulag right here. And a number of them got brutalized, like Muhammad Butt, who was from, like, Syria. And he, according to the administration, had a heart attack. As it turned out, when the family had an autopsy done on the body, his ribs were broken. He had been brutalized and beaten down. Now, he was collected after this whole 911 scare, who was not a terrorist. There were no charges placed against him. It was that whole roundup, INS detention type thing that Ashcroft, in other words, the population, some of whom thought that they were going to be a model minority status. Well, after 911, all the model minority status expired. And Ashcroft and the FBI issued out new cards to other minorities. They were the Negrification card. And that meant you can be detained, beat down like regular Negroes, or kicked out of the country like Negroes who caused problems, like Marcus Garvey was. and to make sure you got your Negrification card, Ashcroft sent out many of his little FBI troops. Look, from John Birch in Chicago, you had a situation where here was a traditional American Bayou Christian cop putting electrodes to inmates' ears and genitals and cranking up the generator and just frying you up. This was done in the prisons and police stations to try to basically get you to admit to some crime that you may or may not have even known anything about. This is how these thugs act. Consistently, we've had all types of stuff at Corkinson Prison with the little death squad known as the Sharks, who are brutalizing people on a consistent basis. Abner Louima, you got these cops sticking, some obscene object up his rectum, like the American flag or some sick obscene object like that. I mean, you can't get much more obscene than that. And this is just happening right on the plantation. So, and overall, while you saw them, come down a little bit on some of the little sickos who got caught red-handed, with the American flag right up someone's rectum, saying cheese. Well, while they, had to somewhat slap those individuals over on the hand, the institution overall doesn't change. That's up to us, because overall what they do is this play the bad apple syndrome, rogue cop, rogue soldier, and they do not want you to examine the overall mechanism, policy, and program that the empire uses to humiliate people. Now, also part of the reason that Sam's ass is exposed more and more, at least in the rest of the world, is how the media covers it throughout the world and through independent type of media outlets. Now, here's Dar Jamil. he's describing how Bremer, you know, Bremer's supposed to be like the head man in charge, U.S., you know, man in charge over in Iraq. Here, Dar Jamil describes, now this doesn't come out over the U.S. corporate media. Dar Jamil was in some of these press conferences, and he describes how Bremer, when he gets a question he doesn't like from the Iraqi media, he just ignores them. Check this out. Now, he's actually calling from Iraq, so the cell phone he's on is not perfect. But if you listen closely, you can make it out. Check this out.
Reports from the military are that it is all insurgents. However, reports from the hospitals in Najaf, from the doctors in the hospitals, as well as Al Jazeera, which is actually the only media on the scene there, there have been many civilian casualties in the attack. There is no way to verify that it was a anti-aircraft gun, as the military claimed. However, what is for sure is there have been many civilian casualties in the attack. They went to the 5 o'clock press conference this afternoon over at the Coalition Provisional Authority at the Coalition Press Center. We call them the 5 o'clock Follies, the press conference held by General Kemet and Dan Senor, Mr. Bremer's spokesman. And in fact, this happens so often. They've been to a couple of those press conferences now. It's happened each time. Today, a couple of interesting things occurred. One Iraqi journalist asked Mr. Senor, to begin the press conference, Mr. Senor had gone on at length about compensation for people who suffered under Saddam's regime. And she asked him, basically what compensation was being paid out for Iraqis who have been suffering under the American occupation. He ignored the question and went on at length about compensation for people who suffered under Saddam. She asked the question again. He ignored it and went right on to the next question. Another Iraqi journalist, about 5-10 minutes later, asked the general about Fallujah. He said, basically a typical tribal situation. People are defending their homes. Why don't you just sit back, continue to work for peace? Why do you insist on running patrol through the city where they obviously don't want you there? It's only causing more loss of life on U.S. soldiers' side as well as the people of Fallujah. So why don't you just work for peace? Why don't you just refrain from this and keep trying to find a better compromise to alleviate the loss of life on those sides? His response was, next question. He simply would not answer the question. Everyone is in disbelief when this occurs. It's really stunning. Every Iraqi reporter and Arab reporter who basically saw most of the first two rows in the press conference have their hands up vehemently for every question. They rarely get called on. And then when they do, most of the time their questions are simply ignored. It's really a stunning thing to see.
Now, see, this is Sam in his true light. See, this is Sam really showing his ass. See, here you have people just asking basic, competent questions.
Like they're supposed to.
Right. This is their profession. Anyone with concern about the issue should be asking those questions. Compensation for U.S. occupation. They brought their imperialist ass in there. Even Colin Cancer Powell told Boy George that, look, if you break it, you have to fix it. Then another person said, why do you keep trying to push your way into Fallujah? Why don't you just step back? The people don't want you there. Of course, they're going to keep resisting. And what does the imperialist do? Ignore them. Now, see, this type of exposure is intentionally muted.
Right.
In the corporate media here. Oh. Because they don't want to present Sam and themselves in the true light. Because why I say themselves is because if this was a true democratic media system, they'd be asking those type of questions.
No shit.
It takes these Iraqis and, you know, other people throughout the world to ask Sam these damn questions. And when Sam is not in the spotlight, when he's in the shadows, well, that's how he responds, by ignoring you. And when you're in the shadows in Iraq or some other place throughout the world where the spotlight's not on you, he just blasts you away.
But it's not just imperialist arrogance, Tracy. They do it to people right here. When George Bush has his little, you know, presidential press conference, they got ways of...
But we were talking about in the context of, you know, what just going on over there.
But I'm trying to say they do the same thing to the American people right here.
Well, I mean, as many thousands of times as we've done things right. on the corporate media system in a whole segment right. that's called Ventures in Corporate Media right. Land right. that right. deals with it right. here, I think that's pretty obvious.
Right, but it's important, though, that they abuse, the American people in a similar fashion.
Well, wait a minute. It's obvious, like I said, that they're abusing the quote-unquote American people in a similar fashion by the whole point that this is an independent person reporting this.
That's right.
These press conferences that that he went to, CNN and those other guys are there.
That's right.
They're just not showing these things
exactly.
on their corporate media system.
Part of the head fixing.
Right. They just show you what they want you to see to help present the illusion that, you know.
This is a great country here. We got. Is this a great country or what? Yeah, right. Check this here. This is how arrogant and sick the thing done got. They done actually decided to change the Iraqi people's flag. Now, this is totally uncalled for. I mean, from the interest of the imperialists, for real, does it really matter what the Iraqis use as a flag? No, they going to tell the people, and here's your leadership, here's your flag. Oh, and by the way, here's the story you can print. Now shut up, go away, and do what I told you. And then they say, and this is how you help to rebuild the country. No, man, let me tell you something. This will not stand. They know it. And you know how you know they know it won't stand? They wasn't talking no shit about no UN a year ago, was they? No, the UN. Blah, 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 blah. Now they, oh, yeah, well, we have to bring the UN in and blah, blah, blah. Because they can't cut it. They know it. They done already lost. It's over. They will never succeed in subduing the Iraqi people, in my opinion.
Well, last week I did a whole thing on the good, bad, and ugly images. Of course, Tillman, the little former professional football player, now a mercenary martyr, he's the good image. You had, of course, bad images like showing the casket of people, of U.S. people who got blasted away. But I also talked about how Sam has bought back and revitalized images to be not so bad after all. And that's like former Ba'athist Party. You know, so at one moment, Ba'athist Party members were supposed to be the scum of the earth. Now they're talking about 70%. Of a former Ba'athist Party are usable, good cadre. See, this is them, this transforming images.
Whatever.
Right before, you know,
whatever.
This is how blatantly arrogant these thugs are. And, Ashley, how much of a quandrum they gotten themselves into. But next, let's go to Raul. He's from the writer of the book Full Spectrum Dominance. He goes into how Sam is exposing his behind to the rest of the world once again with his form of collective punishment strategy. So let's check out what Raul has to say, and we'll take it from there. Check this out.
The story starts with what is really an incredibly brutal act of collective punishment, kind of on the scales of the collective punishment you saw in the heyday of colonialism in the late 19th and early 20th century. Take an example in India once in 1919. Some English woman was walking down a street in a city in Punjab, and she was verbally harassed by some people on the street. The British, in response, put forth the crawling order that henceforth every Indian going on that street, that entire block, had to crawl the entire way. Here it's a little bit different. Here the four people were killed, and in response the United States has levied an incredible assault on the city, killed probably over 700 people, with more yet to come. So it's already a collective punishment on the ratio of at least 150 or 200 dead to one of the original people. They were mercenaries, and like most of the mercenaries in operating in Iraq, they're you know, they're real thugs. They're ex special forces, covert ops people who have, you know, who have a lot of blood on their hands, to say the least. And they were killed, and then their corpses were mutilated and dragged through the streets. And the imams of Fallujah have already condemned the abuse of the corpses, but none of them will accuse the killing of military occupying forces in the middle of a war. And so the United States started this assault. And the ceasefire, you must understand, was basically this. The United States has assaulted the city, and with the level of force it's using, it is fought to a standstill. It loses by estimates I've seen about 40 Marines in that fight. And so then it decides, instead of going further this way and suffering more of a cost, why don't we see if we can win the same basic military victory by what we call negotiation, but it's the kind of negotiation the United States always does. The demand is for the insurgents to give up their weapons, or at least their heavy weapons, which is equivalent, because with Kalashnikovs alone, you can't withstand gunships and tanks. So you have the insurgents disarm and basically hand you the military victory that you weren't able to win by fighting. And you know, the Mujahideen of Fallujah are not stupid, right? They understand that once they disarm, then the Marines will come in and occupy the town and will round up all of them. Mm-hmm. And when you get rounded up in Iraq, you disappear into a Gulag archipelago. It's not terribly different from being rounded up by Saddam's regime. Unless you're specifically targeted, you're going to be tortured less than you were under Saddam. That you have the same basic lack of rights. You're held incommunicado. Your family doesn't know where you are. Very often, if you're taken in certain circumstances, your family doesn't even know you've been taken, and you disappear for months, and possibly for some people it's going to stretch into years, and you're treated very brutally. So why exactly would the Mujahideen, who have not yet lost this battle, agree to this very obvious conclusion of being essentially taken and thrown into a kind of living death in the new American prison system, which, by the way, is one of the few things that the United States is actually reconstructing in Iraq.
Ain't that the truth? And that's just part of the real world. Now, this is part of a collective logic that the rest of the world really understands. Now, while Sam is on his mission of death and collective punishment, Tulia, Oklahoma style, you know, where they burnt up a whole the black portion of the black population in Oklahoma in 1921, dropping bombs out of airplanes, burning the whole thing up, you know, find a Negro, any Negro, lynch the Negro, and then it escapades into killing up everyone they can get their little hands on. This type of collective punishment strategy has always been deeply rooted in the psyche of these Indian killers in this land. And Raul, this goes into quite logically, most people throughout the world understand this. And those who didn't are quickly understanding it. Because when you're facing the hardcore brutality of the U.S. Empire, you best come to some kind of realization about what the real world is made of, or you're going to be sliced up like a piece of Swiss cheese awfully quick. So they see these mercenary guys coming out there. They seen these soldiers of fortune randomly shoot into populations that are just out protesting. They have been inundated with depleted uranium and seen the cancer rate amongst their population skyrocket. And what was the first thing that Sam did when he got his boots over there? They went running to the banks and the oil fields. They weren't concerned about anything else. That's how Sam operates. So this type of reality of what Sam is doing helps once again in another aspect expose the ass of Sam. Also, in another way of how even though a lot of gumps in this society may not look at this particular issue of Sam exposing his behind on how brutal he really is, for much of the population, world population, the mere fact that Mr. John Negroponte has now been sent over there as the new ambassador to Iraq, and he's going to replace Paul Bremer as the head red, white, and blue cheese in charge, does not escape many conscious people like Letitia Bordes as she talks about how this brute of Central America fame has basically been, or basically had the carpet rolled out, the red, white, and blue carpet rolled out for him by both the Democrats and the Republican Party. Check this out.
I was really involved in that. When I found out that John Negroponte was going to be nominated as our ambassador to the UN, I just was in complete shock. And at that time, my mind went back to 1982. And in 1982, I had gone to Honduras on a fact-finding delegation because there were 32 women from El Salvador who had taken refuge in Honduras. They had taken refuge from the Salvadoran death squad. These women had been followers of Archbishop Romero, and after his assassination in 1980, they fled to Honduras. And shortly after they got there, all these women disappeared, and there had been witnesses to their disappearance. They were living in a house of refuge, and they were taken out of that house, put in a van, and nothing more was heard about them. So in 1982, I went with a delegation to Honduras, and during those 8 long days that we were there, twice, we met with John Negroponte, who absolutely denied that he knew anything about the disappearance of these women. And also, I remember so well, John Negroponte kept on saying that the U.S. Embassy did not interfere in the affairs of the Honduran government, and that we would have to deal with that issue with the government. We would return to the Honduran government, who in turn would send us back to John Negroponte, and they would tell us that our embassy were the best people to help us in this case. And this went on for 8 days, this back and forth. And when we were not meeting with him, we were meeting with various people working in human rights. We were hearing about the horrible, horrible atrocities that were going on in Honduras at that time. And we were reading the paper, and even in the newspapers, we would read about people disappearing. And John Negroponte kept on insisting that he knew nothing about this. And of course, we knew that he was lying to us. And when I went there, to tell you, I was quite naive. I thought we were going to go there, and we were going to come back, and on the plane with us, we would be bringing back these 32 women. And what I found out when I was in Honduras, I saw how our government was implicated, not only in what was going on in Honduras, but what was going on in El Salvador, what was going on in Nicaragua, and everything was meshed, and that the U.S. Embassy in Honduras just stood for a very, very evil object right there that was commanding these evil things going on in Central America. I feel that John Negroponte certainly is not concerned about the democracy of Iraq. I think that John Negroponte is concerned about his reputation. He's an expert in counterinsurgency tactics. We see that in his background. And John Negroponte will stop at nothing.
Once again, now, while much of the American population has been sleeping at the switch, that this death squad coordinator, this counterinsurgent assassin, is going to be at the helm of leading the attack against the Iraqi people, it doesn't mean that the rest of the world does not see that Sam's ass is being exposed for what it truly is. This guy is just a ruthless, brutal, inhumane savage. This is the type of clown that does not need to be walking around on this planet. Yet, when you're a ruthless, brutal government and empire, He's just your cup of tea. Now, the other week I was talking about how the arrogance of the empire has grown so thick and wide that the people that they use now, for the most part, to be their spokesmen as far as and their administrators, like the president and this and that, they don't have to have, or they're not having them be at the same type of intellectual of other imperialist administrators of the past, you know, people like John F. Kennedy and all of that. This is how Boy George and them can get into office, because they don't put a priority on that type of intellectualism anymore. They just basically feel that it's all wrapped up. The world's theirs for the taking. I mean, that's how arrogant they are. Now, what's interesting about this is that this is not how other countries can afford to have their little spokesmen and those who are in alignment with the U.S. empire. Case in point, Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia is on Meet the Press. And he responds about what and how he advised Boy George to do once Boy George put his boots. Well, wait. Once Boy George had his G.I. Joe soldiers put his boots in Iraq. We all know Boy George never strapped the boots really on.
Wouldn't bust a grape in a race riot. We know that.
Right. So let's check out what Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia had to say on Meet the Press. And then let's take it from there. Check this out.
Bob, would we be correct that you advised the president to take $200 million and buy off, in effect, the Iraqi army, pay them for their service, buy their loyalty, and that they could be a security force right now in Iraq?
I don't talk about my conversations with the president, but I believe that would have been the right way to go. There's no point of Monday morning quarterbacking now. What we need now to do is to make things work.
Now, see, you know, a few weeks ago, before Bandar was even on, and I caught him, you know, I mentioned that if this had been like Kennedy's imperial administration, they would have put more of the population to work. They would have built up the schools as quick as possible and get the large portion of students back into school. They would have done as much as possible to buy off the middle class, so on and so forth. I mean, their intentions, of course, overall, of dominance of the region is the same. But they would not have been so boldacious in their arrogance. But when you have people sitting in line 10 to 24 hours to get a cup of gas in the second largest producer of petroleum in the world, of course people are going to question, what the hell's going on? When large portions of the population still does not either have electricity or goes out 10 to 12 hours. And Saddam, basically within a few months, had electricity back on all over Iraq after the first war. They know something is up. They know what's going on and how things are and are not being prioritized. But in this day and age, the U.S. empire is so arrogant that it feels it can do and swashbuckle around any way it wants to, and everyone else is supposed to bow down. Yes, Master Sam. Yes, Master Sam. So here, you got this Bandar guy from Saudi Arabia. He's telling Boy George, buy off, you know, the Iraqi police and the army. You know, kick some money in their pocket. That way, you can, you know, alleviate a lot of possible trouble that's going to occur. He knows the region better than Boy George, especially since, you know, Boy George and a lot of these neocons are so stuck in their own right-wing, grandiose Christian ideology that they can't see anything else other than the dollar signs and Jesus and all that other hocus-pocus nonsense. So here you have an official. Prince Bandar, he's aware of what's going on and how things are going to erupt. So he tells Boy and them, look, this is how you do it. And they ignore it. And now look, which is good. This gets back to the whole theme of this stuff, of what we're doing. Once again, Sam showing his ass. Now, as we wrap this up, Bandier goes into the oil prices per crude oil and barrel. And whether or not a deal was cut with Boy George in reducing or escalating these prices. So let's see what Bandier of Saudi Arabia has to say as we wrap this up. Check this out.
In terms of oil supplies, this is the exact captions from Bob Woodward's book. I'm worried about the adequacy of the oil market, the president stated, expressing concern for the world market's ability to absorb temporary shortfalls during a war in the Middle East. The ripple effect in the U.S. economy could be gigantic, and he asked about the excess capability of the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. Saudi oil policy could be the saving grace. According to Prince Bandar, the Saudis hope to fine-tune oil prices over 10 months to prime the economy for 2004. What was key, Bandar knew, was the economic conditions before a presidential election, not at the moment of the election. Senator Charles Schumer of New York has called on the president to revoke your diplomatic visa for interfering in the presidential election of 2004 by promising the president that you might lower prices before the November election to help his cause.
So what's the question, Tim?
Did you, in fact, make such a promise to the president?
I did not. The president talked with me for months about the high oil prices and how that could be damaging to the American economy and the world economy as it's recovering. And I informed him my government's policy, which is to maintain oil prices between $22 to $28. And we prefer $25 as sort of medium. And that's the extent of that. There was no deal, no election, no connection to the election. And this is not the first time. In the year 2000, President Clinton asked us to do the same thing because the prices were getting too high, above $30.
But in October of 2000, crude oil was $35 a barrel, so you didn't keep your end of the deal.
Well, there is a reason, because it's not a matter of crude. The reason you have high prices in the United States is the refineries are not enough to refine. There is 1 million barrel shortage of refined products. So even if tomorrow we send you all the oil we have as crude, it will not change the facts here. Do you know, Tim, that the United States has not built a refinery for about 15 years? And like our oil minister said the other day in Dallas, we are willing to invest in refineries in the United States of America and getting that will be the best route to go.
What do you think the price of Saudi oil will be in October of 2004?
I wish I know. But I can assure you now, we've been working very diligently to make sure that the prices will go down below 28. And this is a public position we have taken. We convinced OPEC to agree with us on that. And I don't understand what's so wrong with oil prices going low. I thought that is good for America, American economy, for the American people. And it's definitely good for us in my country.
And it may be good for George Bush's reelection.
It may be good for anybody in the White House and the American people, and we don't see the difference.
That about says it all. Here, Prince Bandier of Saudi Arabia says, whether it's Boy George or whoever, they don't see the difference. He's telling you, look, Democrat, Republican, they're all part of the capitalist system. We're all on the same team. We're all marketeers. We got our thing going on. You know, what do we care? You know? So, once again, with not here, CNN, this is the show it was on. This was Meet the Press. So it was like Channel 4 or 5, CBS or NBC. Here they have this Prince Bandier of Saudi Arabia. They're not trying to expose their ass. They think they're getting into this little thing about, you know, did Boy George and you set up some kind of deal, thinking that they're going to have some kind of, you know, new gate, you know, thing. Where through deregulation, in 15 years' time, no refineries have been built. This is simply because the little oil barons don't want the prices to go down.
That's right.
So they can send, as he said, as many barrels as is under their feet. And it still wouldn't bring the prices down because the oil barons don't have the refinery capacity intentionally to produce the gasoline in its final state. This is intentional, and this is all part of deregulation. They don't want low prices. The higher the prices, the more profit for them. Then he mentioned that, look, crime Bill Clinton, during his administration, another buddy of his, asked him to have the prices within $25 to $28, so in other words, these guys negotiate all the time. This is not some grand conspiracy. They get up there and they talk in the Oval Office. They go to Boy George's house. They go to Clinton's house. They kick it. They're on the same team. And then the last thing was, as Bandier said, it doesn't matter if it's Boy George. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat. There is no difference. What's the difference? As long as, from his perspective, the imperialist machine keeps rolling, it's all good. So once again, without intending to, they expose their asses for what it truly is worth. And that's how you take it beyond the shadow.
Well, they probably didn't even see that, though, Drazy.
Nah. Hold on a sec.
Well, there's this group of Christian fundamentalists who want to have a new world war, and they want that world war to begin in the Middle East because their reading of the Bible suggests that if there's an all-consuming war between what they consider to be the forces of Christ versus the forces of the Antichrist, who could be the Muslim world or the United Nations or the European Union or France, probably, depending on your interpretation, then that will bring about the second coming of Jesus. And all the true believers, in other words, people who believe what they believe, will be magically wafted out of their clothes and their spectacles and their dental fillings and will fly up into heaven to sit at the right hand of God. So in order to bring about this event where the sky becomes full of floating nudists, they need to create a great conflagration in the Middle East. And bizarrely, weirdly, though this sounds completely insane, these people have a great deal of power within the Republican Party, and in Texas in particular, at the recent conventions, for instance in Houston, again and again they were thumping this Middle East drum and saying, we've basically got to get in there, we've got to back Sharon far harder than we've backed him, we've got to get the Palestinians out of Palestine, shove them into exile, we've got to get a greater Israel which goes all the way from the Nile to the Euphrates, and then we can bring about the second coming. If we think democracy is the best way to run a nation state, or the least worst way to run a nation state, then why should it not also be the best way to run the world? And at the moment, we have about the most undemocratic settlement you can possibly get. There are 191 member states of the United Nations. Five of them, the permanent members, have veto powers which can stop all those other states from exercising any democratic voice. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund run on that time-honored democratic principle of $1, one vote. And what that means is that though they work almost exclusively in the poor world, they're controlled exclusively by the rich world. And that means that the people of the poor world, over whom they exercise enormous power, have no say at all in the course of their own lives. World Trade Organization, in theory, every nation has one vote, which is why nothing has ever been put to the vote at the World Trade Organization. If you believe that that is a fair way to run the world, well, that's up to you. Just don't call yourself a Democrat. Anyone who calls himself a Democrat must surely accept the case for a radical transformation of the way the world is run. In principle, every one of the 184 members can vote and cast an equal vote. In principle, Honduras has the same vote as the United States. In practice, what happens is that the nations called the Quad, the European Union, the United States, Japan and Canada, get together before all the General Assembly of the World Trade Organization gets together, draw up a draft declaration for a World Trade Agreement, and then basically present it to the rest of the world on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. And either all of you guys accept that this grossly unfair draft agreement, which basically says the rich world gets everything, the poor world gets nothing. Either you accept this agreement in its entirety or you reject it in its entirety. But there's no prospect of saying, well, we'd rather have a different agreement and we'd rather the agreement contained this element and that element so that the poor world actually had a share of the cake. Very interesting here, and I think this gives us a certain amount of hope, is a sort of power relation developing between the rich and the poor. That every time the forces of economic globalization try to extend their global reach, their global empire, they actually provide opportunities for the other side, for us. And what we've seen with the World Trade Organization is the bunch of rich countries getting together and say, we want as many poor countries in this organization as possible so we can open up their markets and exploit their economies. And in particular, we want China. We want China in because it has a huge potential consumer market. They bring all these guys in and suddenly they find they're outnumbered. They find they're surrounded. They've created the power which can be used to confront their own power. And what we saw in September in Cancun in Mexico was that power being exercised by the poorer nations for the first time. These nations which outnumber the rich ones, but also have in their midst this great immovable block called China, which can't be kicked around like all the other nations can. And so what we're now seeing, we saw with Brazil just a few days ago, taking on the United States, saying we contest these cotton subsidies which are ruining the livelihoods of hundreds of millions of cotton farmers and their families around the world. And they successfully took them on and successfully contested it. And I think the worm is beginning to turn. I think what we're beginning to see now on the global level is the forces who stand for justice, the forces who stand for democracy, the forces who stand for the poor rather than the rich, are beginning to get their act together and beginning to fight back and beginning to find a means of delivering the sort of new world order which I'm talking about. I feel that the key component of democracy is a free and fair press. And unless you have a free and fair press, unless people are told what's really going on in the world, how can they possibly make an informed choice when they go to the ballot box? How can they possibly say, we prefer this guy to that guy because this guy's got better policies than the other guy, if they simply don't know what's going on? Without a fair press, without a free press, without a press which is bold and courageous and prepared to tell people what's really going on, you cannot have anything resembling a genuine democracy. And if there's one thing which destroys democracy in America, destroys democracy in Europe, destroys democracy all over the world, it's the concentration of ownership. It's the fact that the media organizations are run by a group of billionaires. And what do billionaires want? They want a better world for billionaires. In order to create a better world for billionaires, they have to convince the people that what's good for them is good for everybody else. Whereas, of course, the opposite is the case. A better world for billionaires means even greater levels of inequality, even greater levels of oppression. And what we have to do through the alternative media, the media like this, is to find the alternative voice which says to people, listen, a better world for billionaires is a disaster for everybody else. We need a better world for the poor, a better world for the middle income, and a worse world for billionaires. Even the Pentagon now is listing it as possibly the foremost threat facing humankind, even the Pentagon. And we are looking at the possibility of making the living conditions which permit human life to take place on Earth, making those conditions impossible. It's a very interesting little snapshot of what could potentially happen. 250 million years ago, the Permian period came to an end in a catastrophic way. About 90-95% of all life forms were wiped out, including anything bigger than a small pig, i.e. anything bigger than ourselves, or indeed smaller than ourselves. And the reason for this, huge emissions of carbon dioxide produced by volcanoes, raised the world's temperature by 6 degrees. Now, the current projections by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change are talking about anything up to 6 degrees within this century. We could make the conditions which make human life possible, we could destroy those conditions within this century if we don't move very, very fast. And what we've got to see as part of any just world order, as part of any world order which is actually going to permit people a decent standard of life, any people a decent standard of life, we've got to see a huge cutback in the consumption of fossil fuel. And it's a measure of the effectiveness of the corporate propaganda relayed through the corporate media that people aren't taking to the streets about this right now. I mean, this guy, George Bush, is endangering the conditions which make human life on Earth possible. What could be worse than that? What could be a more appalling disastrous project than the one that he is following. And if people are going to rebel about anything, that's the thing to rebel about. There's a whole series of stuff, of course. One of them is reducing standards on pollution control. Another is extending the logging of old-growth forests. Perhaps the most dangerous of all is this extraordinary thing where he wants to roll back the Montreal Protocol, which is the global agreement protecting the ozone layer. Now, of course, if the ozone layer goes, massive increase in skin cancer and cataracts and a lot of other human health problems. It was all signed and sealed and dusted. This Montreal Protocol was an absolutely secure part of the current world order, where you couldn't produce the chemicals which destroy the ozone layer. But Bush, in order to help golf course managers and cardboard box manufacturers, was trying to unban the mass production of methyl bromide, a pesticide which destroys the ozone layer. This is the maddest policy that I've ever come across in 20 years of investigative journalism.
Some enemies. In fact, I think we've been fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'm Gerald Smith, and this is your Making It Plain News Service. Check this out. One of the things that we've been trying to talk about here at Slave Revolt Radio is how the army, the military machinery of imperialism has stretched itself thin. How what they call globalism, we call imperialism, has led to policies that have impoverished the overwhelming majority of this planet. Half of the people in this world live off a dollar a day. So let's look at what is the result of this. What's going on? Well, let's look at Brazil. The landless in Brazil have seized property, and they're demanding immediate land reform. When former trade union leader Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva was elected president of Brazil in January of 2003, landless peasants were key allies to Lula's Workers' Party victory. Expectations ran high that with the worker in the highest governing position in Latin America's biggest, richest, and most populous country, the extreme poverty faced by millions of Brazilians would finally be addressed. Well, today, the landless movement, that's the MST, representing 4 million of Brazil's poorest peasants, is mobilizing again. MST leaders charged that Lula's government is moving too slow to address the concerns of the landless across the vast country. Peasants are seizing property of what they call unproductive estates, as well as seizing government offices and blockading roads. 90% of Brazil's land is owned by 20% of the population, while the poorest 40% of the population own just 1% of the land. Some 50 million of the country's 175 million people live in poverty. But right down the street, if you look at what's happening, for instance, in Venezuela, you're going to see something that, well, I don't know if you want to call it disturbing, but it looks like Washington is preparing a military intervention against Venezuela. U.S. imperialism has attempted on 3 occasions to overthrow the democratically elected government of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And by the way, let me just share this with y'all. We just had a Mumia Abu-Jamal Internationalist Film Festival in which we showed a number of excellent films last Friday night and Saturday. But one of the films that I thought was the best was a film called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which was the story of the attempt of the United States government with the Uncle Toms or the Compradores of Venezuela to stage a coup against Chavez. And it was a very, very powerful movement. And I understand, people just were lucky, it looks like. There was some luck involved because these documentaries were in the presidential palace when all the stuff broke out. So they got all of it. And it's very, very instructive and worthwhile. I urge you to check out that great film, First Chance You Get. Now, the first attempt, as I said, was documented in that film, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, was the coup d'etat exactly 2 years ago, organized by the Venezuelan oligarchy in cahoots with the CIA and the U.S. Embassy. This was defeated by a spontaneous uprising of the masses. Although George W. Bush had recognized the coup with indecent haste. The second attempt was the so-called strike. In effect, it was a boss's lockout. 18 months ago, which was organized by the CIA using corrupt CVT leaders as a front. The second attempted coup was defeated by the movement of the Venezuelan workers, who established elements of workers' control in PDVSA and other industries to prevent acts of sabotage by these Comprador Uncle Tom elements that support imperialism. The latest attempt was the recall referendum campaign by which the right-wing opposition hoped to force Hugo Chavez from office. They call this a campaign for democracy. That's what your State Department calls it. Well, they're running out of fools, and now they are entertaining some foolishness about attacking Venezuela. I think only a fool would try so at this moment. And I'll tell you why. Because all those Uncle Tom, those traitors, those, you know, quislings that wanted to open the door for imperialism to come in there and directly take over the Venezuelan state and economy, well, they had to run. They had to leave the area, see? They're in the United States now, those so-called military leaders that tried to pull off that coup. So it is highly likely that the army, insofar as they have an army in Venezuela, is pretty loyal to Hugo Chavez at this moment in history, you see? So now they want to attack. We'll see. Slavery folks are going to monitor that. Stay with it. Get back to y'all. Now, here again, we're talking about Bolivia. And some people that recently went there talk about how they went there for a vacation. But what they found was 25,000 students demonstrating, along with professors and support workers, and marching through downtown and then gathered in the rain at La Plaza San Francisco. And what they were fighting for was more funds for education. The speakers called for the government to use Bolivia's massive natural gas resources to fund education instead of allowing foreign corporations to capture most of the benefits of that gas. So even your natural resources, which you think might be the one thing that these people have that they can put out there and kind of keep a roof over their head, the imperialists done snatched that up too. Oh, they're in trouble. Because the people are obviously conscious of it. So now it's the young students demonstrating. Remember, not too long ago, Bolivia experienced a revolutionary upsurge. So everywhere you look, people are getting tired of Sam. Now, this gentleman, Pat Tillman, has been turned into a hero. I remember back down in South Bronx, the Puerto Ricans would call him a pendejo. Yeah? Idiot. He left that $3.6 million, and everybody said, wow, what a man, what a man, what a man. Well, what a man? I don't want to spit on the grave of the sucker. But I want to tell you something. That is false consciousness at its height. He want to be Rambo. You know, he going to go in there and joined up with the Rangers, so he knew what he was doing. So I guess I have to say he got what he deserved. Now, a lot of other soldiers over there are not getting what they deserve. There are people that is, we're talking about some of the rank and file soldiers now that are not so famous, that have spent 140 to 150 days without a single hot meal. I want you to stop and think about that, man. People, don't start whining. No. That's a health question. You need to eat some warm food to help, you know, it helps your whole body, man, a decent warm meal. They've been eating out them cans and them packets, you know? Now, the temperature in Iraq right now is 120 degrees, and they're getting, the soldiers are getting rationed water. You get it's 3 liters. I want to tell you something. 3 liters is measly when you're dealing with 120 degrees. Actually, a lot of doctors say normally, under normal conditions, you should drink a gallon of water a day. It's good for you. Water is good for you. Helps flush your body out. In 120 degrees, to be rationed, roughly 3 quarts of water. That's rough. The tools of war making are flowing in, but the basic needs of the soldiers are not. The American soldiers are writing home saying, get this, please send me toothpaste. Please send me toilet paper. And yet, when you go to the military to ask them to comment on this, they bring out one of these career soldiers that tells you that everything is just fine. We're going to kick some Iraqi ass and send you on your way. This information has come from the military families that speak out. It's a movement of people with relatives in Iraq. Now, there's some good news. I got some very, very good news, and I'm going to just lay this on you, bam. Y'all remember April 7th of last year? April 7th of last year, we went out on the docks trying to shut down, you know, some of these stevedore companies that were actually in cahoots with the government and this whole war and occupation. So we went out there and we faced them down, and they put some serious action on us. They had all kinds of plastic bullets and pellets and bean bags and tear gas, and they dogged people out seriously. Okay, this year, April 7th, we went back again, just to let them know that we had not forgotten this abuse. In the meantime, our people had been fighting in court against bogus charges that I guess they had assaulted the police by falling on the ground and allowing their head to hit up against a policeman's knee or some foolishness like this. Well, folks, let me just tell you, all the charges have been dropped against the Oakland 25. All charges have been dropped. This is a small but modest but very real victory. The Oakland 25 have had all of the charges dropped against them. Oh, and by the way, in the case of this gentleman that passed, this gentleman, Mr. Tillman, at least, the CIA killed him. The very agency that he probably loves. Because remember, it was who created the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in the first place. The U.S. is in Iraq, and if Bush is blind, Kerry is at best nearsighted and does not really provide what we can honestly call an alternative. That's why we have to build a workers' party with a revolutionary program that will fight for a workers' government. Cast off all illusion that these Democrats are going to do anything substantial or consistent to aid us in our plight. That's going to be all right now for the Making It Plain News Service. Y'all make sure to tune in again next week.
Well, that's just going to about wrap it up for Slave tonight. As the U.S. Empire keeps exposing how bitter and brutal it is, keeps showing how its version of democracy is basically as sweet as a lemon, it's time for us to explore some avenues that are sweet as a honey. And since it's about that time, I think you know what type of honey I'm talking about. Until the next time, Slave Revolt. Out.
Listen, girl. Don't you hold on to me for the things that I've got. You hear? Listen, there's more to me than what you see.